In our relationships, it is easy to play the blame game, where we blame other people for our choices or our problems or maybe even our own unhappiness. But whenever we engage in playing the blame game, it is actually toxic to our relationships. I want to welcome all of our churches that are joining us today, everybody that is watching at the online campus or on Facebook, welcome as well. Perhaps you have heard this phrase, don't hate the player, hate the game. Some of you have heard this phrase. Hopefully you're not using that phrase too often in its original meaning. If you don't know where that phrase comes from, it is written by the great theologian Ice-T, is the person that wrote that in his incredible hermeneutical work entitled Don't Hate the Playa, is where that comes from. And it really turned into this kind of cultural, kind of pop culture phrase that what it represents and what it means for all of you that are like, who's Ice-T? What it really means is that it's a way for somebody to blame somebody else and to say, hey, my reason for hurting you or taking advantage of you is not really my fault. Like if somebody, you know, manipulates somebody in a romantic relationship to get what they want from that person, seduces that person, and then after they get what they want, they kind of, you know, drop them and move on. That person, I can't believe that you did that to me. They would answer back, don't hate the playa. You can tell I use it a lot, right? Don't hate the player, hate the game. In other words, like, it's not my fault I took advantage of you. It's the whole dating game's fault, or it's, you know, kind of biology and physiology because of who I am as a man. I can't help but, you know, just kind of act that way. And so that's the whole idea, as if romantic relationships are some sort of a game. The problem is, in games, there is always a winner and a what? Loser. And in a relationship, when there is a winner and a loser, there are really just two losers. Nobody really wins in a relationship when someone wins and someone loses. And so what we're doing each week of this series is to say, let's look at some games that we can easily fall into. We can easily find ourselves, even unknowingly sometimes, participating in that actually hurt the relationships that are significant and matter to us. Now, as we begin talking about this idea, the games we play, the blame game, all this stuff, I would just want to begin with a confession. Confession is good for the soul. So here is one of, you know, kind of a confession as I was thinking about this, is I have some significant issues when it comes to games. I love playing games. I am overly competitive and care about winning way too much. Throughout my short, competitive athletic career in high school and then in college a little bit playing football, I received multiple personal foul penalties in my career. In basketball, in high school, many technical fouls. I've actually been kicked out of several games and sporting events. Some of them where I was just sitting in the stands. They said, sir, you must leave right now. You're not welcome here anymore. And I've actually, not proud of this, but it's true, was kicked out of a church league basketball game in which I was the pastor of the church we were playing in. And I still got kicked out of that game. Not proud of that. I'm just telling you, I have some issues when it comes to games and competition and winning. So how many of you would be willing just to confess right up front as we start this today to go, you have some competitive winning game issues as well. Hold your hands up, keep them up. And I want you to look around the room because these are the people that would be willing to race you out of the parking lot today. All right, so if you wanna, you know, like, game on, buddy. No, I'm going first. Like, there's the psychos willing to play that game with you, okay? Now, seriously, I can turn anything into a competition. If my wife calls and says, hey, let's meet for dinner at such and such place, and I get in my vehicle at the office and meet her there, she gets in her vehicle, brings the kids, we have a great family dinner. Then afterwards, you know, I get in my vehicle, I take one or two kids, she gets in her vehicle, she takes one or two kids. I do know how many kids we have, if in case you're wondering. Does he not know how many sometimes? No, there's three, so somebody has one, somebody always has two. And so if we get in our vehicles and we're both driving to the same place, guess what I do? I turned it into a race. I'm like, oh yeah, let's see who gets home first. And so, you know, me and the kid in my vehicle, we go whoom past her minivan, like, aha, you know, like, we're going to win. And then she looks like, you're such an idiot. That's the look she always gives back, because she's not as much of a game player, not kind of as quite as competitive. But I was thinking about this. I've been this way as long as I can remember, because one of my best friends is actually visiting me here in San Diego this week. We've been best friends since I was 7 years old and he was 6 years old. And I started thinking about, because he's here, a game that he and I used to play throughout our childhood, especially in middle school. We played this game called Last Hit. I don't know if you ever played this game. I wouldn't recommend starting it now as an adult. It's kind of, you'll see why in a second. But the idea of Last Hit is when you and your friend part ways, you hit your friend. It's obviously a middle school game, right? This is what middle schoolers do. You hit your friend in the arm, and then you want to try to run and get away before they can hit you back and touch you. And if you got the last hit, you win. I don't know what we ever won, but you win, okay? And so, like, we would be walking through the middle school hall. He'd go to biology class. I'd be walking next to him, and we'd be, you know, and then he'd get right by the door. I'd hit him, take off running, go to English class, close the door. Winner right here. We'd get off the bus. You know, we'd walk. We lived in the same neighborhood. He'd punch me, you know, and I'd forget about the game. He'd hit me, take off running, run into his house, lock the door. Loser. And we did this all the time. And it was all fun and games until one night, my father picked us up from the movies, was bringing us home. My friend's name's Brian. And so Brian and I are in the back seat. We pull up in front of Brian's house. Brian opens the door, hops out. As he is leaving the car, I, boom, got him a good one right in the leg. My dad thinks he's out of the car and closing the door. And so I slide far away so he can't reach me. And he has to like lunge kind of back in to get me. My dad thinks he's not near the vehicle anymore and starts pulling away and runs over his foot. He screams, ah, you're on my foot, my foot. At this point, my dad had rolled over it and off it, but my dad thinks he's on it, so he puts it in reverse. 100% true. Rolls back over it and then puts it in park on his foot. He is screaming. We're all freaking out. My dad comes around. He's like, ah, he's on it. Has to go back over, put it in drive, get off his foot, carry him into his house. Like, it was kind of a freak out. It was really, really bad. Good news is he still has one leg. He's totally fine. He can walk. He made a full recovery. But it was really bad. Actually, until later that night while I was laying in bed, I'm like, man, I can't believe that happened. But then this thought occurred to me. No, it was really good. Because I won. Like, how sick am I, right? Like, I have issues. And the truth is, as I thought about it, I'm like, dude, I'm not just sick. Like, my family's a little sick. Especially, I think this sickness comes from my dad. Like, dad, if you're watching online today, I just want to let you know that it's your fault that I'm this way. I blame you. Because my dad always made everything a competition. Like, that was just one of the fun things he and I did together. And so everything was a race. Everything was a competition. Basketball was big in our family. And so we always had a hoop in the front yard in the driveway. And we would go out there and shoot. But it was never enough to just shoot around. We had to make it a game. Like, who wins? And so we'd play pig and horse. And as I got older and bigger, it turned into one-on-one. And I'll be honest with you, my dad was not the dad that let me win a game occasionally. It was like, you got to earn it. Like, when you're big enough and good enough, you can win. And I was better than him in ninth grade. I was bigger than him. I was better than him. But I would drive down the lane, and he would just, boom, just hack me. And be like, my bad, foul, take it out. I didn't beat him till 10th grade because I was scared, like the intimidation factor. So, Dad, I love you, but I am this way because of you. All right? It's your fault that I'm like, do you see what I just did there? I played the blame game, right? Because, man, we are just like that. We do not like to take responsibility for our actions. We like to say, it's him, it's her, it's them, or the reason I did it, or the reason I have a really good reason, and we like to play that game. In working on this message, I looked at an ad from a lawyer. Lawyers are like the professional athletes of the blame game, right? I mean, they get paid to make sure that everybody goes, yeah, that's not his fault. And so there was this billboard that this was the statement that a lawyer put on his billboard for why you should call him to get his services. Here's what he said. Just because you did it doesn't mean you're guilty. I thought, I better write that number down. I might need it. I might need that someday, right? I mean, his whole ad appeals to something in our nature. There's something in you and there's something in me that doesn't like to say we didn't. Or even if we did, let me explain it away and give you the reasons why. So let's just collectively play a little blame game right now. You want to know why you're that way? You want to know why I'm that way? You want to know why all of humanity is that way? I mean, really? Isn't it these two people's fault? Like, can't we just blame them? Right? Like, it's not our fault. They messed it up for the rest of us. The blame game is the oldest game in our history. What did Adam and Eve do when God showed up in the garden after they ate from the one tree? There was one rule. Everything was perfect in the creation narrative. Everything's perfect. And God says, just don't eat of this one tree, the knowledge of good and evil. Adam and Eve did. God showed up and he looks at Adam and he goes, did you do the one thing I told you not to? And if you know the scripture story, what did Adam say? He said, yes, Lord, I did. I absolutely did it. I'm sorry. I own up to it. 100% my fault. Like, forgive me, Lord, I'm a sinner. Is that what he said? No, he didn't say that. You know what he said? These were his actual words. The woman you gave me made me do it. It's not my fault. I mean, he actually blamed two people. He said it was her fault. And then he was like, well, and Lord, you gave me to her. Like, you gave her to me. So technically, it's your fault as well, God. So 50% you, God, 50% her, 100% clean right here. That's what he did. And ladies, have men been trying to pull that game since the beginning of time or what? That's not my fault. I didn't. And then what did Eve do? When God was, you know, like, Eve, did you do this? She blamed the serpent. She said, the serpent made me do it, which is why to this day, women are more afraid of snakes than men. That's actually not true. I made that up. And some of you are like, is that in the Bible? Yeah, I don't know if you're afraid of snakes or not, but here is my whole point with that, okay? My whole point is that whole blame game, it's in our nature. I mean, it's the oldest game in history. It's you, it's them, it's not me. Or I had a really good reason why, and if you would only see that from my eye, you would understand this isn't a big deal as you think that it is. Like we all do that. It is in our nature. Think about it in terms of your kids, right? Did you have to teach your kids how to play the blame game? I have three kids. They are professionals at the blame game. I didn't have to teach it to them. I mean, from the time they could talk and fight, they always blamed it on their brother or sister. This just happened the other day. I hear a little scuffle. Somebody's crying in the backyard. My boys are back there. They're 10 and 8. Somebody's crying. So I open the sliding glass door. I'm like, what is going on back here? And the 10-year-old is holding his face crying. And my 8-year-old, Titus, says, I'm like, Titus, what happened? And he says, well, Lincoln was fouling me, so I threw the basketball in his face. And I thought to myself, well, clearly then he deserved it. Right? Like, I mean, your violence toward him was obviously his fault. Like, he totally had it coming. And so it's in our nature. There is something in us where we just play the blame game. It is the oldest game there is. But here is the problem with the blame game. If you're taking notes today, I want you to get that outline out. Click over on the right place on the app. Or if you're online, click over there on the right side for notes. And I want you to write this down. Here's the problem with the blame game. Two problems. The first one is this. When I play the blame game, it keeps me from improving myself. Every time I point the finger out there, I stay the same. Blame stunts my growth. It keeps me from improving myself. I stay stuck in my pride. I stay stuck in my insecurity. I stay stuck in my issues because I don't ever see them or I don't acknowledge them because it's not me, it's you, it's him. It's her, it's that boss, it's that teacher, It's that person over there. And it keeps me from growing, becoming the person that I probably really want to be. And if you're a Jesus follower, becoming the person that God really wants you to be. Because blame makes me stay the same. Here's another thing blame does. Not only does blame kind of stunt my growth, here's the other thing blame does. Blame keeps me from improving my relationships. Keeps me from improving my relationships. All relationships have conflict, tensions, and hurts that happen. If you've been married 2 weeks or longer, you know this. All relationships have these problems. And healthy relationships are not defined by the absence of conflict. Oh, well, we just never have any problems. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a healthy relationship. Healthy relationships have conflicts. The definition of whether a relationship is healthy is how those conflicts are handled. How they are handled. And in a marriage, in friendship, in a working relationship, when I blame, the relationship doesn't just stay the same. You see, when I play the blame game with myself, I stay the same. But in a relationship, when you play the blame game, the relationship actually begins to deteriorate. It gets worse. As long as I say it's him, it's her, it's you, it's never me, I'm actually just as guilty. Look at the verse on your outline, Romans chapter 2. The Apostle Paul says this, "So you can see there are no excuses for any of us. If your eyes shift their focus from yourselves to others to judge how they are doing, you have already condemned yourselves. You don't realize that you're pointing your fingers at others for the exact same thing you do as well." You see, blame will always hold us back from the relationships we really want to have and being the people we really want to be. So how do we stop playing the blame game? I want to give you one verse today that is very simple yet incredibly profound. Don't look at it yet. I see some of you looking, eyes up, okay? Here's why I don't want you to look at it yet, because it is so simple. When you read it, you will be willing to dismiss it. You're going to go, really? I showed up for that today? Like, because if you showed up today and you're like, okay, give me some profound statement that I'm just, you know, that when I say, you're just going to go, wow, I never heard that before, blowing my mind. Like, I'm sorry, I don't have that today. I don't know that I ever have that, but I definitely don't have it today. What I do have is a very simple truth that is not easy to live out. It's simple, but it's not easy. But if we will engage in saying, God, with your help, through the power of your Holy Spirit in me, help me live this way, I promise your marriage, your parent-child relationship, your friendships, your working relationships will be better and healthy if we will put this at work. So I want you to be open to the Holy Spirit and see how the Holy Spirit is going to speak to you through this one verse. We're going to read it in parts. And we're going to kind of study it in three parts and learn from it. So let's look at the very beginning part, Colossians 3:13. In fact, can we read this out loud together? All churches, patios, parent viewing rooms, auditoriums, ready, begin. Make allowance for each other's faults. Told you. Not like, wow, right? You're kind of like, really? Like that? Make allowance for each other's faults? You see, we live in an each other world. What I mean by that is, other people's life and their choices will affect you. Unless you choose to get off the grid and go live by yourself in the mountains or the desert or the woods, people you love, people you work with, children you gave birth to will annoy you and hurt you. And here's what Paul is saying. He's saying, expect it. Don't be surprised by it. In fact, in certain instances, even allow it. Give allowance for each other's faults. Give room. It's going to happen. If you look at the bottom of your outline, one of the books in your recommended resources, if you want to read more on this subject of relationships, is by Dr. John Gottman, who has done hundreds of thousands of hours of research on couples. And from his research on couples, he's written a few books. One of them is Making Marriage Last. And here's what he discovered in his book, that one of the characteristics of healthy marriages and unhealthy marriages, marriages that last and marriages that don't, is that they understand the difference between problems and tensions. Problems and tensions. Problems, he says, are only about 25% of the conflicts in marriage, and they need to be dealt with. They need to be addressed. They need to be talked about. People need to apologize. Forgiveness needs to be extended. Resolution needs to happen. Fix it, solve it, close the book on it, move on. But only about 25% of what he says in most marriages, you know, where they're like, oh, here's all of our conflicts. He says, really, 25% of them are problems. 75% of them are tensions. And he says the marriages that last and the healthy relationships are the ones where they grow in understanding of those tensions and they give allowance for it. Instead of trying to change that person, instead of trying to go, oh, I just have to overcome this, they learn to live with it. And what he's talking about here are not, you know, significant hurts. Those are the problems. He's talking about things that really are differences in personality or preference. Things like one person is a morning person, the other is a, you know, night owl. One person likes to get there on time or early. The other shows up, shall we say, fashionably late, right? One person is an introvert, one person is an extrovert. One person knows how to squeeze the toothpaste correctly, even and from the bottom up, is how it's supposed to be done, in case you're wondering. And the other person recklessly and wrongly grabs it in the middle. It only took my wife and I 15 years to realize, buy two tubes of toothpaste. We don't need to get divorced over this. Buy two tubes of toothpaste. Some of you, that's all you need to hear. You're good for the whole series. That's going to change your marriage right there. You're like, why didn't we think of that, right? So these are the things that are tensions. And Gottman says healthy marriages, and we could say healthy relationships, learn to accept and give allowance to those tensions and differences, not turning them into problems. Because people will annoy you, people will wrong you, and people will sin against you. And guess what? You will do the same thing to them. And so really what we need to do here, if we're going to stop playing the blame game, write this down, you have to own your own. Own your own. It's so easy to say, look at him and her and them and it's you, but own your own. Don't blame. Carry your part. Have you noticed in a disagreement, when it's getting, you know, tense and the emotions are getting into it and like, no, it's you and it's your fault. Da-da-da-da. If one person will just stop and say, you know what? I'm sorry. You're right. It's my fault. I did it. I own it. I apologize. Would you forgive me? If one person does that, what happens to the tension level? It goes down. And so, you know what? Own your part. Choose to be the bigger person. Choose to go first and bring the tension down. Own your part. Let's go back to our verse because he keeps building on this. Here's what he says. Let's start from the beginning. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive some of the people who offend you. Is that what it says? No. That's just what we do, right? What does it say? And forgive who? Say that word out loud. Anyone. Woo! Really? But you don't know what he did. You don't know what she said. You don't know the promise. Forgive anyone that offends you. Now, I know this is really, really hard stuff, but don't dismiss it. Here's why. Because healthy relationships, forgiveness is one of the markers of healthy relationships. Healthy marriages, healthy parent-child relationships, healthy friendships, healthy working environments all have large amounts of forgiveness regularly asked for and then generously given. That's what healthy relationships have. Large amounts of forgiveness regularly asked for. I blew it. I'm sorry. I did it. I didn't do it. I said I would. Would you forgive me? And then generously given. You're forgiven. Thank you for apologizing. That's what healthy relationships do. And so what he's saying here, write this down, forgive each other. If we're gonna stop playing the blame game, we have to forgive each other. Anger and bitterness and resentment toward yourself for what you did or didn't do, or towards another person because of what they did or didn't do, it only holds you back. Everyone look right here. Forgiveness sets you free. It sets them free. And it sets the relationship free to move forward again. If you're stuck in the blame game, that relationship is not just stuck, it's getting worse. Set it free to get healthy again. And then Paul, who writes this almost as if he knows our pushback, he says, let me add one more sentence, because some of you are already, as soon as that word forgive anyone, you're like, well, you don't know what he said. You don't know what she didn't do. You don't know the pain that they caused. You have no idea. And so as if he knows our pushback to this idea of forgive anyone, he writes one more small sentence on the end of this single verse. Let's read it from the beginning again. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Dang it. There goes all of our excuses for playing the blame game. That's essentially what he did. Because if there's anyone who has the right or has ever had the right to play the blame game, you know who it is? It's God. He could look at humanity and this broken world and say, look at how this is. Messed up, broken, because of you people and your sin. I mean, man, you human beings, you lie, you cheat, you steal, you take advantage of one another for personal gain. You murder, you kill. Look, this perfect creation I had, look at what you did. And then God could say, and then every time I try to intervene and help out, sure, you worship me for a little bit, you follow me for a little bit, and then you turn your back on me again and again and again and again. So God could have just said, you know what? I'm done. I'm done trying to have a relationship with you. I'm done trying to redeem this broken, fallen, messed up world. And he could have said, forget it. I'm not trying. It's your fault. And he could have walked out the door. But he didn't do that. What did God do? He went first. He went all the way. He didn't play the blame game. He said, you know what? I am going to send my son. I will go first. I'll take it, and I will send my son to take your sin upon himself on the cross so that everybody can be forgiven. It's what we're going to celebrate Easter. Easter's only a few weeks away. Can you believe that? Holy Week. It's going to be here soon. And what we celebrate through the death of Christ on the cross, that he took our sin upon himself, what we celebrate as he was put in the tomb, but then ultimately he rose again, is that through Christ's resurrected life, we can have new life. Not because of our religiousness, not because of how good we are, but simply because of what Jesus has already done. What he did is he took our sin upon himself, and then, write this down, he let it go. And that's what we need to do. How do we stop playing the blame game? The things people have done to us, we have to do what Christ did for us. We let it go. Please resist the temptation to sing the Frozen song in your head right now. Some of you were thinking it. I didn't go there. You should not either, okay? Let it go. You see, if there's one virtue that should mark the life of a Jesus follower and make us stand out from the rest of the world and the rest of culture, it's our choice to forgive. Because we should realize how incredibly undeserved we have experienced God's grace and his forgiveness. And therefore, we should extend that to the people who have wronged us. And by forgiving someone who has hurt us, we are not ignoring the offense or giving a stamp of approval by choosing to forgive. Rather, we are obeying a command of Christ and modeling his grace to the world. You see, if you're married, you're a Jesus follower. If you're in a marriage and both of you are Jesus followers, your marriage is meant to be a picture of God's relationship, what he desires with humanity. What I mean by that is that we are more screwed up and flawed as people than we could have ever imagined. Yet we are at the very same time more loved by God than we could have ever hoped for. And in marriage, it is meant to be this relationship where a person knows you at your absolute worst, yet they love you absolute best, unconditionally. Don't you want that in your relationships? Then here's what I would say. Choose to give it. Choose to give it in your relationships. Here's our bottom line and big idea today. Go ahead and write this down. Here's the big idea. I will break through when I stop blaming you. You want a breakthrough in your marriage relationship? You want a breakthrough in that parent-child relationship? You want a breakthrough in your working environment where everybody's like stepping on each other to get there and it's them and it's that, that you go first. You be the first one to stop playing the blame game.